The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Money FM 89.3, best of workday afternoon.
Hello and welcome into the Health Suites on Money FM 89.3. I'm Melissa Hyak, and joining us today is Dr. Bernard Lee, CEO and Executive Director of Singapore Pain Care Holdings Limited. And don't be fooled, his titles may be CEO and ED, but he is actively practicing. Hello, Dr. Lee. Thank you for coming on to the show.
Hello. Hi, Melissa. Thank you for having me.
Okay. First up, prostatitis is inflammation, right, of the prostate gland, which I understand can be very painful.
Yes.
But is all pain in the prostate necessarily, prostatitis?
Okay. That is a good question. Well, first of all, maybe I may just kind of describe. Very often, people don't know what the prostate pain is like because the prostate is not something easily accessible. It's inside. So if you put your finger, not you, but if the men put their fingers between the testes and the anus, the stretch between the scrotum and the anal fold,
right.
that area is where the prostate is.
Okay.
So it's deep underneath the skin.
Right.
So when there is prostatitis, when there's inflammation of the prostate gland, patients will feel what we call the perineum pain. So that is that area where between the testes and the scrotum and the anal fold. So that area of pain, and it can radiate to the testes themselves. So the testes, aka the balls, that is the they also can have what we call testicular pain, and this pain can radiate further to the tip of the penis. And all that together can be very excruciating pain. In some places, in some of our medical literature, we may even describe the prostatitis pain as very much like what a woman's, to the woman delivery of pregnancy kind of pain.
Wow.
So it can be really excruciating. It can be sharp and shearing. It can be really painful. And this pain itself can be constantly there, or it can be very episodic through the day, whereby it is not related to any form of stimulus. For example, if the patient is sitting quietly, they can get a pain.
Mm-hmm.
Or they are walking along the streets, they can get that pain.
How does the gland get inflamed?
So very often, there are quite a lot of different factors, but the most common one is usually an infection. So an infection can cause the prostate to be inflamed. So this infection, it can be in a form of what we call urine tract infection, or it can be a sexually transmitted disease, whereby it can also, through the urethra and then get infected in the prostate itself.
How common is prostatitis among men?
Wow.
In Singapore?
It's a topic that is seldom discussed. So people may not even be aware of this condition of a prostatitis, but our medical literature states that it ranges anything between 9 to 14%. This is international data.
Mm-hmm.
We actually have a local data done by my good friend, M.K. Lee. So this was reported in 2011, whereby we reported our Singapore prevalence as about 2.8% of the population of Singapore suffering from chronic prostatitis.
Okay. So if, going back to my first question, right, so if you feel pain, as you've described, is it always necessarily prostatitis?
No, fortunately not. God forbid. Yeah, otherwise it'd be quite debilitating. So some other conditions that mimic very much like prostate pain or prostatitis pain will be things like urine tract infection or a bladder stone or a kidney stone that's traveling down the ureter that actually causes the, when patients may feel pain, especially during urination. That kind of pain, and this may be the starting point that heralds other symptoms to follow on. So, for example, that they may start saying, oh, I go to the toilet and I pee. Oh, is this burning, shearing pain, that kinds of cutting, you know, through the penis gland. And then after they finish maturating the last few drops, and then they're still feeling that pain that goes through the perineum. And this kind of pain can be a simple urine tract infection, fortunately. And or it could be just kidney stones that actually travel and migrated down to the bladder itself and cause bladder irritation, you know, the stone in the bladder. So these are other conditions that mimic a prostatitis pain.
Mm. In the world of prostate health, right, how serious is prostatitis as a condition?
Ooh, it can be pretty debilitating from patient's perspective. But the other spectrum, or the other end of the spectrum, would be if untreated, there is a link between chronic prostatitis to what we call cancer.
Yes, I was just about to ask whether it's a precursor to cancer.
Yeah, so the link is there, but it's not an absolute direct link. That it doesn't say that if a patient has got chronic prostatitis, they'll definitely have got the prostate cancer. But we do know that a chronic inflammation of the prostate, especially if it keeps recurring and keeps coming back and it doesn't get resolved, this chronic inflammation state can actually be a precursor or trigger of prostate cancer.
Okay, or symptom of perhaps other health issues that will contribute towards prostate cancer.
Yep,
can
that's
we say
right.
that?
Yeah.
Okay, we know that men in general are not great with pain, but, you know, they are even more reluctant to see doctors, right? I think between men and women, men are 30% less likely to consult a doctor for any condition they might have.
Yes, very well said. Yes, you're right. Yeah. In my practice, I actually see a predominance of women with pain. And you're right, the men tends to either shy away from seeking help, or that they just think that it's part and parcel of life or aging or degeneration, and they take it very much stoically.
Or they think, I just drink more water and everything will be fine, you know?
So they tend to want to handle it themselves, or they go and ask their friends, or they search Google, and then they try to self-medicate and try to do their own things. Yeah.
So what are the red flags that should tell men that they should right away, or have women tell their men, right, that they should right away go see a doctor?
Okay, so first, most patients will usually start if they get the initial, what we call the acute inflammation or the acute prostatitis. So if the pain persists for more than a week, and after your own self-help remedy, you go and alkalinize your urine, you drink a lot of water, you do fibers, you do all kinds of things, and it's still not going away, and the symptoms persist, it's definitely necessary to go and see a doctor, at least your GP, if not a specialist, to exclude a simple thing like a urine tract infection. So because that can be easily treated with antibiotics, and that will, once treated early, it doesn't progress. Some infections will so-called persist.
Right.
And especially if it's poorly treated or not well treated, because with prostatitis, acute prostatitis, early stage acute prostatitis, we may need antibiotics of up to 6 weeks. It's not the simple kind of urine tract infection whereby we treat the urine infection up to maybe just 5 days.
Why?
For prostatitis, because it's a very deep-seated gland.
Right.
So when it's a very deep-seated gland, the blood circulation to that gland, it doesn't course really right through the gland sometimes. So the penetration of the antibiotics that circulates in our bloodstream does not enter the gland so well. So that's the first. Second thing is that the bacteria that kind of hides in the prostate, once it's infected, is not easily treated. They tend to hide there, and it needs a long duration of exposure to antibiotics to get that remedy. Hence the 6 weeks.
Yeah, you talked about a 1 week sort of, you know, observation period in a way, right? See how long it tahan.
Yeah.
Right? But like, what if the pain level were only mild, but it persists? You know what I mean? Some people think that, oh, the pain is the more painful, it may definitely more serious. The less painful, it means it's, you know, getting better.
That is a good point. So a lot of the milder symptoms whereby they don't even get pain when they're standing, walking or sitting, they only get pain when they go and pee, and then maybe it's not even the full maturation stream, and it's only at the end when they squeeze the last few drops and they get a pain. That is still a sign that is poorly controlled. As I said, once the infection stays in the body and is not well treated, it tends to present itself itself later on as recurrence of chronic prostatitis.
Okay.
And chronic prostatitis, I mean, we don't have time to go into that. We actually break it up into a bacterial version versus a non-bacterial version. It means that one is infected. It means that every time when we do a urine test or a prostate semen analysis, and there's still so-called signs of the bacterial infection, whereby we still use bacteria antibiotics as our first line of treatment for chronic prostatitis. And whereas the other form of the non-bacterial prostatitis, we may use other things that are not targeted at antibiotics to treat the prostate pain, such as we call it nerve stabilizers for medications, or even in some cases we may actually need to use desensitization of the nerves of the prostate, because the pain is so bad and the infection has already been eradicated, but the nerves have been sensitized despite all efforts, and we need to go in to do a desensitization of the nerves using some specialized laser injections, very much like a root canal of a sensitive tooth.
Sounds painful.
Well, when there is a need for that, we will actually have to go there, and this is usually done under anesthesia, and it's actually not too bad. It can be done like a day procedure. The whole procedure does last about half an hour, and desensitization of that prostate pain can be achieved very effectively.
When you said anesthesia, are you referring to general or local? Because general is like kind of you know, nice, right? You just kind of put on mask and fall asleep.
Although
I think the risk profile is higher for that. But so, is it local or general?
It's usually done as both, because the need to place the needle, the laser injection, near the nerves that supplies the prostate has to be very precise. So we need the patients to be cooperative or very still.
It's the only way to get them to cooperate is to guess.
It's 11 to 3, yes, that's right. I mean, it's kind of may not be that easy to hold that position while we, you know, try to get to that area. Yeah.
Okay. I think, I'm sure a lot of men who are listening to this are really squirming. I mean, I'm a woman, but I feel myself squirming on the inside just listening to that already. I think the most important thing, I think before you get to treatment, you know, although it's important to know about them, it's probably even more critical to prevent it, right?
Yes.
How do you prevent, you know, and keep in good health something that's deep inside you?
Yeah, okay. A few things. Number one, diet. Diet has actually been found to be quite important in terms of prostate health. So high fiber, good roughage actually is quite important in terms of maintaining prostate health. Adequate hydration definitely is a must. About 8 glasses of water a day. You need to flush the system. You need to keep peeing out. You know, if a person pee less than 3 times a day, we always say that there's always an increased chance of getting first you may start off with a urine tract infection, and then you may progress to what we call a prostate infection. That's the second. And then third is that this is a little bit unproven, but acidic food should be avoided, and well, I wouldn't say avoided, but reduced. And alkaline food might be actually a bigger plus for healthier prostate health.
Yeah. Now, when you talk about acidic foods, a lot of people just tend to think of oranges and lemons and all that, right? But we're not just referring to those, are we?
No. We're not talking about.
What other kinds?
I'm talking
of
about
foods?
Simple things like even your cola, cola drinks.
Okay.
Yeah.
And alcohol, wine.
Wine, coffee. Yeah.
Oh.
So even coffee is acidic.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't want everyone to go back and start throwing away your Nespresso and all that. But,
not likely.
It must be excessive consumption.
Okay.
Yeah, it's
okay.
Not talking about a cup of coffee or a glass of wine a day. No,
okay.
It must be really what we call an excess.
Okay.
Yeah. So in excess, then it will cause acidic buildup, and that might cause a bit more problems to the prostate.
Okay. So I think to revise what you just said, fiber roughage refers to, you know, things that help you go to the bathroom, you know, like lots of vegetables, fresh fruits, vegetables, etc. What about prebiotics and probiotics?
So that is an area whereby lots of interest is there. There are some studies that suggest that probiotics seems to help, but there are other studies that say that maybe not. My own personal feel is that it might help. My stand is very much like a vitamin C. So if a vitamin C helps with your immune system and protect you from getting a common flu, although you may still be down with a flu when you're exposed to it, but it seems to help it. So same thing. I would say the probiotics can help. That's the other thing. And on a different track altogether is that also I would say sexual health. So the sexual health, have a healthy sexual health. Interestingly, we do recommend having a healthy sexual habit. So like having sex once a week or twice a week. Mm. The discharge of the seminal fluid in the prostate is actually helpful. It's not bad.
Right.
Yeah. So, and along the line of sexual health, a single partner is very, can't be overestimated. So, if you have to have sex with an unknown partner, you need to be careful and then wear protective gears, like having a condom on. Yes.
Mm-hmm. What about going to the bathroom right after sexual activity? Is that helpful? Because I know that's recommended for women to prevent any sort of urinal sort of infection.
If your partner is someone that you know, and then you know that the chance of having a sexually transmitted disease is very, very low or unlikely, then there's no bearing whether you go to the bathroom after sex. But if it's a high-risk sex partner, then I would say definitely you will try very hard to, flush it out as much as you can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What about other habits that one might have? For example, I know of people who, tend to hold their urine in and not go until... simply because sometimes people get so caught up with work, for example, or gaming, or whatever. Or these days, we are sitting down a lot more than we did before. I mean, all these different changes in, our day-to-day regular habits, do they have an impact?
That's why I was saying the hydration part. So if you drink enough, you need to pee enough as well, because the body cannot hold the urine for that long. So minimum of 3 times of pee a day, that's, I call it a threshold.
Okay.
So that's the first. And then another myth that I thought would be good for me to dispel is that tight underwear.
Oh, what about them?
Okay. So there has been a myth going on that tight underwear can actually increase, risk to prostate cancer or prostatitis for that matter. No, that's not true. So tight underwear does not increase the risk of that.
Okay, so, embrace your silhouette, men. Okay.
Although tight underwear may impact other things, like we can say that, especially if they are family planning and trying to have a family, the semen quality, all this, will be impacted with regard to tight underwear.
Right. And also with Singapore's humidity, it may not be ideal because there's less ventilation and, you get more prone to certain things growing, right? Nothing belonging to you. Okay. All right. Hey, Dr. Lee, I could go on and on because as you can imagine, as a woman, I have a lot of curiosity about it, but I'm afraid we've got to leave it here for now. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Thank you for sharing so generously your insight.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
We've been speaking to Dr. Bernard Lee, CEO and Executive Director of Singapore Pain Care Holdings Limited. I'm Melissa here for the Workday Afternoon, and you are with Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.